welcome to Two Boomer Women. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. I've been talking with Boomer Women for almost a decade now. Well, I guess I've been talking to Boomer Women all my adult life. Reinventing myself several times along the way, though, but always focused on us, Boomer Women. With this incarnation of Two Boomer Women, I'll be interviewing other women who have a message of interest for our demographic. If you want to hear about or learn about something specific, let me know and I'll find someone who understands us to talk about it. There's a contact page at twoboomerwomen.com. If you want to be a guest on Two Boomer Women, bring it on. There's an application form at the website too. Finally, this show is all about conversation. We women know its value. We know how to do it, and we must perpetuate the art form. So let's get started with today's show. Hello, Boomer Women. On the March 24th episode of Two Boomer Women, my guest was an amazing, interesting woman, Phyllis Chubb. Her wisdom proved even greater than I realized, as did my impressive lack of knowledge about philosophy, science, astrology. Well, today Phyllis has returned, and she is going to discuss Western thinking versus Eastern thinking. Now, I use the word discuss, but I'm going to prove my wisdom by keeping my mouth shut as much as possible. Phyllis, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
The show today is all yours. Western thinking, Eastern thinking, where would you like to start?
Well, my goodness, this is a huge topic. Huge. And as much as we would expect that I would be talking about the sun and the moon and the planets and whatnot, the difference between Western astrology and Eastern astrology, which is called Jyotish, which means, Jyoti means light in Sanskrit, and Tish means, in English, we only have the word God. So it's the spirit. If we can expand our English language, because our English language is very specific, it's very narrow, it limits our reality, it limits our ability to experience and to appreciate, because it's so black and white.
So in some of the circles I travel in, the word universe, so they don't thank God, they thank the universe.
That's good, 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 good. Because in physics, what they were finding now is God, or the universe, the energy of that, is within everything. We look at a tree, we can see the difference between a vital, healthy tree and one that has done its cycle, that doesn't have that energy within it. Now, we can see, and I would like to be able to use the term consciousness to refer to, I will say, God, the creator, the universe, the great spirit, whatever anyone wants to call it, it doesn't matter. And as we try and expand our language to identify various energies, it will help us understand some other, now I have to use a bad word, religions. And what a religion is a set of rules that dictate within whatever the philosophy is, how the world is seen. So that if we look at our indigenous people here, their recognition of life within everything, life within all things, I think is broadly called the Great Spirit. And everybody had their own identification with an aspect of the Great Spirit. So we had some people who appreciated whales or salmon or bears or whatever. And we can look at the world of other philosophies. For instance, Santana Dharma, which is Hinduism. And in our culture, in the way that we see, God is one. There is only one. You've got one name, and that's it, and it's male. If we look at the indigenous cultures of the world, their great spirits or universes were generally of both genders, as in Santana Dharma. Both genders. The most common symbol that can be used, I think, by all cultures is the image of a creature or a human being half male, half female. It's when those two energies come together that you have an entity. You have a complete entity. For instance, there is a picture of Shiva, a statue of Shiva, half male, half female. And we have, even now in English, a word that is bantered around a great deal, which is called Shakti. The Shakti of something, which is the full strength that enables anyone to achieve whatever it is they want to achieve. So that if you are looking at a male, it can be a human, it can be a dog, it can be your local cat, doesn't matter. If they're male, they have a female Shakti, the energy that drives them. That is why you can see a female, but she has a Shakti, a male energy behind her. You see, none of us function without the balance of the genders within us, because each brings something vital. The female energy is very nurturing, supportive, inclusive. The male energy is goal-oriented, protective, focused. And we see that all the time. Like, most women have a difficult time doing the type of work that men will do. They'll do the same damn job, day in, day out, day in, day out. Women have a tough time doing it 2 days in a row, because women naturally multitask. If you ask a man to multitask, he almost gets paralyzed. It's not because he isn't thinking. It's not because anything is wrong with him. He just has dominant male tendencies. That is why, and we can see this shift in the energy in people who are homosexual. If we see a physically female with powerful male traits, she can take on that job for 10 years. Conversely, if we see a person who has a male physical form, but predominantly female in their thinking, where do you think we get our artists from and our great chefs and musicians and all the rest of this? And how many women aren't happy to have a gay male as a friend? So this is a way that you can see a demonstration of the difference of those energies that are perfectly normal, perfectly natural. There's nothing here to judge as right or wrong. It's an isness. Other ways that we can see the importance of recognizing energies within. I just realized I'm going down a long path and I better get back over to.
I'm actually loving.
No.
There are a whole bunch of people I know who will say, Phyllis just made it sound so obvious.
Well, it is obvious.
Yeah, it is. But you have the words to get it out there.
You see, and this is back to our language and to our politicalization that we have been raised within. Now, this is where I can get into trouble. So before I say too much more, it's important to separate the judgment of this is right, that's wrong, to acknowledge the energy we may feel toward, which hopefully we do feel toward or be it within ourselves, of a God, a spirit, a universe, whatever we call it. There is this consciousness, there's this awareness that we are not our body. There is something more within us than this thing that develops gray hair. And we have been trained to disregard that, to disregard the importance of knowing who we are, of knowing how to, what I call, hold our consciousness, to be able to recognize the power that we have within us, to impact our environment, positively or negatively. If I hold someone else responsible for my happiness, I'm going to be the most unhappy person in the world because somebody's going to tick me off, which is impossible. It is not practical. It's not logical. I do it myself. It's because I decide that someone should have smiled at me instead of looking away. And because they looked away, they're mean, miserable, awful people. And therefore, I don't want anything to do with them. So next time I see that person who looked away, they may have a smile in their hand out and I stick my nose in the air. And then I wonder why they don't like me. And it's so easy for us to learn how important our consciousness is. And if we can apply what I just said in maybe a better example, and because I think this is primarily women, we will understand this easier, I think. If our husbands get up and they're in a filthy mood and they go out and they slam the door and they don't say goodnight or goodbye to us or anything else, and we have all day to think about it, and then the poor bugger comes home and he comes in the house and he can be in a good mood now and we're just fit to be tied.
With mentioning husbands, what I'm remembering is a woman I met a long time ago who was having marital issues, and she resolved them by saying, what I see is who he is. And I can either try to change him into what I want him to be, or accept him that this is who he is. And she resolved her marriage that way by just stepping back and taking herself out of his
precisely
consciousness.
And
yeah,
that is holding her consciousness. That is so important for all of us. To be able to recognize that when we have a situation in front of us that we don't like, and there's going to be lots of those, keep us on our toes, we can accept it for what it is, non-judgmentally, and move through it. And you'd be surprised how that lowers big mountains in our lives. Now, how this ties in to the difference between Western and Eastern astrology is interesting, because in Western astrology, the variety that is used today indeed does come, I'll say, from the Arabs, which isn't exactly true, but it's close enough, from Babylon. That's true. It does. The worldview that they held was what we can call today a materialistic view. Like, matter is the only thing that matters. We have to be able to see it, measure it, dissect it, weigh it, take it apart to be sure that it exists. We have to see it. And we can see the planets, and therefore they're important. But there was another little thing in here. The sun in our tiny sphere is vital to us, vital to life on this planet. And the sun is male, has been deemed to be male, the son of God. So along with putting God in heaven, the planets all got the power that the Greeks had originally given to them, because the planets were symbols of energy. They have been symbols of energy for all cultures. There's Chinese astrology, there was Mayan astrology, and these are core values within our life. And in Western astrology, we have limited ourselves to what we can see. Now, in the past, I think it's almost 70 years, maybe more, since 29 when Pluto was discovered, we start to take outliers and attribute values to them, which is fine. You know, it doesn't hurt. It's just that we're still attributing values to them rather than to us. So that when we look at a Western chart, we look at the potential of an individual. Oh, they have this and they have that, and they could do something else, and they're going to be able to do that with the transits, and there's everything's going to be sweetness and light, and you can do anything you want. You just have to duck low when Mercury's retrograde. Well, that's not how Eastern chart is set up. Now, one thing I forgot to mention is that a Western chart is tied completely to the relationship between the sun and our earth. In other words, between our seasons, and it's the motion of our earth around the sun, which many people have been murdered because they had the gall to say that the earth went around the sun. This is a regular pattern. It has inconsistencies at various times of the year, which we don't usually pay attention to, but they're there. We know that on the 21st of March, it's spring. We know that the sun is sitting in a certain relationship, and on the 27th of, or 21st of September, it's in another place, and it's the first day of fall. And we know that on the 21st of June, that's the longest day of the year if you're in the northern hemisphere, and the shortest if you're in the southern hemisphere. And that's a time that all cultures party. It's a time of great Thanksgiving, because it's preparation now to move forward. And on the 21st of December, the sun stops, as it did in July. And lo and behold, we have a little occurrence. It seems like the sun has stopped for 3 days, which is, that's not true, but it appears that way. The sun starts to move north. And so we say the sun is born and we celebrate Christmas. All these seasonal patterns are connected. For instance, it's 21st of March. Because the moon used to rule the calendars. So we had such a thing as a sun calendar and a moon calendar, and they were a little out of sync. But one of our few holidays that we still celebrate, if we are living within an Abrahamic religion, is Easter. And what is surprising is how we've been able to keep it, how people have kept the symbols of Easter, which is an egg. And that's why we have Easter eggs, is because that represents the ovum. It represents birthing, fertility, and the energy that the form that has been given in many cultures is a rabbit. And that is why Easter is celebrated with rabbits and ovums, because it's high fertility, sex is on. And in our culture, we say, oh, this is a time for love. Well, that's a nice way of saying that everybody wants to be impregnated. There's a lot of practicing that's going on there, and some production through. So if we can use a little humor sometimes to look at the symbolism around this. Now, I am not being disrespectful when I'm saying this, because for a number of reasons. Number one, we don't really know if Jesus was crucified. Number two, we don't know how long he lived. We don't know if it was even an event for sure. But the philosophy of the party is that at Easter, there is the death of what is, which is winter, and there's the new life, the rising. And indeed, the sun is rising. So it is a time to be grateful. It is a time to acknowledge the spirits. If you recognize the Great Spirit as being Jesus or Abraham or whatever you want to call it, do it. Because you see, it doesn't matter what we call that energy. It doesn't matter what we attribute to it. What matters is that we are aware of it and we acknowledge it. And that's what's important. And you see that diversity in the acknowledgement when we look at Santana Dharma. And that name, by the way, means the eternal knowledge, the eternal path. There, yes, there are three primary. Like we have God the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. They have Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. The creators, Brahma, and God. Vishnu, the stabilizer, God the Son, and Shiva, destruction and rebirth, and the Spirit. But within that philosophy, because they think everything has this consciousness, this energy is everywhere. You can love that energy however you want. You can worship your dog. It doesn't matter. If that is how you see the energy, if that is how you're closest to the Creator, to that energy, that pulse of life, go for it. What is most important is that you acknowledge it. Not that you have to worship in the sense of saying, help me, give me, give me, give me. but in saying, thank you, thank you, thank you for my life. Thank you for my understanding. So there's a big difference between the gimme, gimme and the thank you. Does that make sense?
It makes complete sense. And what I'm feeling as you speak is that, I mean, I'm a product of a Western upbringing.
So am I.
Typical school, yeah, except you've expanded your own knowledge. And what I'm noticing is I have all these compartments of knowledge, and you have like created, it's almost like the umbrella that allows them all to open and intermingle, whereas so often we don't let them intermingle.
That is the key. You just hit the nail on the head.
Thank you.
Because it is very difficult in our culture to link all the compartments. And we are encouraged to keep those compartments separate. Because so long as we keep those separate, we're off balance. We're so busy juggling the balls that we don't stop to appreciate and to know our lives or to be willing to look within. Because the knowledge is within. Now, 5,000 years ago, when the Abrahamic philosophy started to develop, and by 2,000 years ago, as they were busy, they talk about the Christians being murdered. Huh. They wiped out the Essenes and the Gnostics because, well, number one, we got to remember this planet, this sphere that we're in right now, this loka, is violent. And that's a fact. It's up to us as individuals to make peace with what's here. By putting God in heaven and enforcing the philosophy held by the reigning party, they were able to limit any deviation from what they wanted, which was control, and they got it. Very simple. One of the most valuable things that I think should be read in school so people could understand why we got ourselves in this position is in the 40s, the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. And thankfully, I think it started, they finally got access to them, I think somewhere in the 80s, early 90s. And we now have very good translations from phenomenal scholars. And these books are available to read. And in reading them, you can have an understanding of what happened and how we've been shaped. I wish everyone would read it. Read them. It's not an it. It's a number of volumes. But in those books, you have the recordings of what was said by Jesus, what was said by the disciples. You also have spans of a couple hundred years between memories. They forget to say there were generations in that period of time too. It's same in Buddhism. When Buddha died, the first year after his death, they called a council and people came from everywhere together to record what Buddha had said. As opposed to what we have, they gathered it together 200, 300 years after and have been doctoring it ever since. So it's important to go back to the beginning. And in the beginning, Jesus said, I am not your savior. I am your teacher. Now that doesn't help a political party. Well, back to astrology. in Western astrology, we have this materialistic attitude. Those are the planets, and they provide us with traits and talents and attitudes. In Eastern astrology, you look at a chart, and those planets, which are called graha, and graha means the power to grab, and they are instrumental in our consciousness. So it's up to us to understand ourselves. And that's the value of an Eastern chart, because it shows the soul growth. It shows what challenges you'll have in a life. What are you here to learn? What are you here to experience? What kind of tools can you use to have better understanding of this? It's a complete reversal in the thinking. So in Western thinking, the planets are doing it to us. In Eastern thinking, the planets are showing us what we are. They're not giving to us. And behind or under or over these two attitudes is a huge philosophy. And on the Western, we have the philosophy of the Abrahamic ideas of one God, good, bad. You go to heaven, you go to hell. It's a jealous God, and there'll be no gods before me. I created absolutely everything, but some things were good and some things were bad. It's your fault it's bad. You're not doing it my way. To the philosophy of the East that says, hey, this isn't your first rodeo, ducky. You're going to learn sooner or later. But that has to be your decision, because nobody can tell you what to think. No one has the right to tell you what to think. Look inside and you will see how best you can respect others, harmonize your energies, do all those good things. Big difference. Does this mean that everybody in the West is basically stupid and bad? No. And does it mean everybody in the East is brilliant and perfect? No. We're all humans, and we come in various sizes, shapes, forms, and conglomerates. And each of us has our individual or sense of individuality in this little period that we're here. And it's up to us as individuals to understand ourselves.
Now, you used that word political or politics or something just a few minutes ago. And I'm wondering if for those people who need the power...
We all need the power.
Well, okay. Let me finish my question and then okay. Just because I could be totally out in left field. But is it in their best interests for us not to have the big picture?
Certainly.
Okay. So yeah, I don't know where I was going with that question. It was just.
I'm sorry for interrupting you. I shouldn't have done that.
It's okay. Because I get these ideas and then it's like, okay, that's what I'm seeing, thinking, but I don't know where I want to take it from there.
I understand that.
It's just, as I say, because you're opening my little compartments and they're starting to get together outside the compartment.
That's good.
Yeah, I can form questions, but then I can't always form the afterthought yet.
What? I said we all need the power. when you use that word, we all need it. We all need to recognize that consciousness. Be we call it God or Jesus or Mary or Joseph or Lakshmi or I don't care what we call it. That energy is real. The teachings of Christ are no different than the teachings of all other philosophies. Love thy neighbor. Support others. Be kind, be gentle, have an open heart, hurt nothing. Respect every life form. And that means trees and weeds too.
Why is it, and I mean, I'm sure I'm opening Pandora's box here. Why is it so important for some people not to see the similarities or to refuse to see the similarities or even the possibilities in someone else's beliefs?
There's something that comes from the Veda that really will help to understand that. And the Veda, the word Veda means knowledge. And there was an ancient culture, ancient. And some are thinking it was 25,000-30,000 years ago. That was very advanced, very advanced. In every conceivable department of life. But one area where they totally excelled was in understanding how we think and sometimes why we think. For instance, they broke down our ability to see the world, to see what we call reality, into five stages. And the most important thing we have as humans is our senses. It's the five senses of sensation, feeling. So our eyes see something, it's an energy pattern. Our mind converts that into, this is a computer, this is a pen, this is a cup, okay. Then that information goes to our intelligence and we say, oh, yeah, I've seen a pen before. I know what that is. Yeah, I drink my coffee every month. Yeah, or every day. That.
Don't do that because that's just echoing. I'm not going to edit that out.
I'm sorry.
No. It's just...
Oh, okay. There's my cup. I recognize that. That's okay. I recognize a couch and a window and a blind and all these things I see. And then that recognition goes to my ego, to my sense of self. Is that my cup or is that someone else's cup? Do I need that? Do I keep it or can I share it? It's mine. No, it's my husband's. I'll let someone else use it. Do you see that little difference? And after our ego looks at something, then it goes to our moral judgment. I will keep it. It may not be mine, but I want it. I am better than that pen. I am more important. See how that goes? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So as I've gone through this little list and arrived at my cup, this cup that now is mine, and if someone else touches it, they're in trouble. Do you see?
Yeah, and what I was thinking too is so many of us have the predisposition. I don't know, we tend to do sort of the good, the bad, and the indifferent in everything.
In everything, of course, because we have different responses to different energy patterns. So unless we have a clear understanding of who we are, what our tendencies are, we're going to let our ego that is primarily interested in our well-being over rule.
And is that also a product of the path that brought me to here?
Yes.
My upbringing, my...
And that I was... Thank you for saying that, because I was trying to think, how am I going to avoid the next phase of this? Because...
Don't try to avoid anything. This is just so interesting.
We have to look at what is happening in science right now, what has been happening over the last few centuries, and what the ancients have said, to have an understanding of that. For instance, in physics today, they're having a deuce of a time with consciousness, because we have been thinking that consciousness was a product of our physical body. And then if our physical body is harmed, that our brain quits, and therefore our consciousness is gone, and therefore that says that our thinking is a product of our body. Well, unfortunately, what has been happening, and the information is being gathered, especially by anesthesiologists. A person can have an anesthetic and also have perfect memory of what was going on. That's not supposed to work. What happens when humans get an anesthetic, or any animal does, we definitely eliminate or freeze or paralyze a nerve patterning within this body. No question about that. But it doesn't affect our consciousness. So our computers have linked the world. Now, until a few years ago, our culture, we wouldn't talk about such things, about ghosts or life after death or any of these good spooky things. But by Jove, you know, if you look at the history, the stories of all the cultures of the world, they all talk about it. About seeing Uncle George or Aunt Minnie or whoever it happened to be, or for instance, the Eskimos used to name their children by putting a child around the toys that George had in his last life, and the child would pick it up and he'd be George again. And this is how they select the Dalai Lama, and have done for years. And we have cases of children. I know in the 80s, my girlfriend had a son, and that little gaffer, when he was 2.5 and 3, was running around shooting everything and going, ah! And she was having 4 fits because she was a pacifist of the finest order, and she didn't let him watch TV or anything else, but he was killing everybody. Unfortunately, in this life for that lad, the depression has been hard. It was post-traumatic stress in his last life. And it turned out she finally took him for therapy and whatnot. And yes, he was killed in Vietnam. Now he can function with it. And that is so common. We can see it in families. I wrote something recently about that. A family with 4 children. They lived in the same house. The kids grew up. One was sloppy. One was a neat freak. One was loved everybody, and the other one was a black sheep. They were all raised by the same people, under the same rules, the same regulations, everything else. And you have 4 people with a completely different attitude. You see, we come into our lives preset based on what we did last time. So whatever we focus our attention on, we will carry with us. In our culture, we tend to say, well, you know, I came with nothing and I'm leaving with most of it. But the fact of the matter is, we carry knowledge with us. Knowledge is the only thing no one can take from you. And it's the only thing you can learn from. So undo those boxes. Let it all merge. And you'll be surprised how simple and gentle the world can become when those boxes are all merged. And how strong you can feel. Does that make sense?
Oh, it does. So you mentioned the Dead Sea Scrolls is a place where people could start by reading them however long it takes. I understand.
The Gospel of Jesus. The Gospel of Jesus. The Gospel of Mary.
And I understand that the Veda is knowledge. Mm-hmm. But are there any volumes that have been built based on that knowledge?
Oh, definitely.
So can you name something that...
The Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is probably one of the most valuable books to read. And very few people get all the way through it because you have to stop and think about what's being said. There's famous scenes in that book, very, very famous scenes that carry major learning for us. There is another book that follows the same type of self-learning, and that is The Art of War, which is Chinese. There is tremendous merging between the knowledge of China and India, tremendous. And their knowledge of medicine and all sciences is amazing. And that's one of the reasons why, now I opened a tin of worms and I didn't finish it. I'm not going to.
Okay, I have said during our last episode, and I have thought 14 times during this, is I would love to just do like a whole day of Phyllis mm-hmm. Chubb. On podcasts. And it's just impossible because, you know, like everything is intertwined.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's where these, well, I'll say conversation, but the episode goes is as you're talking, it's like, okay, that compartment gets opened in my brain, so then I take it there, and then you take it, and it's just, yeah, it is so amazing. I'm probably going to try to wrap this just because of time. I mean, we could go on for hours, I'm sure, and I appreciate that.
Well, let's see how well this is accepted. The difference between a Western chart and an Eastern chart is one tells you who you are, and the other one tells you who you are. So you know who you are. It helps you find out that.
So what I'm doing here is I'm flashing up on the front page of the twoboomerwomen.com website. I say, if you're ready to listen, tolerate, and maybe learn something, click the button above and listen into the podcast. So if someone doesn't want to do any one of those things or any of those things, so be it. And I wish them a great life and realize they won't be back. But this is what I'm enjoying about the Two Boomer Women podcast is let's spur thought. Let's trigger some emotions. Let's go down those paths that somebody has said were taboo.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so thank you.
And thank you.
Phyllis, my awe at your knowledge and wisdom doesn't seem to end. My asking and your agreeing to come on podcast is going to be put into my coup list. It really is. Before we wrap, in our last chat, you explained how so many people seem to read romance novels, that you've written several romance novels as a platform for imparting some of your knowledge. Can you give today's listeners just a quick teaser of your books?
The next one that is going up and should be up in, say, 2 weeks has to do with a woman who thought she had everything organized in her life, and she was definitely a materialist. And then she accidentally met, well, she met a man, and there was an instant knowing, absolute instant knowing. And much to her dismay, she took him home. And he said, but I know you, I know you, we know each other. And they started a life. And her struggle with starting to recognize there is more in our being than we pay attention to. And how she managed to see the spirit in trees, in animals, in how she dealt with other people. The growing up, the learning, it's there.
Okay, well, after we close off the podcast, I'm definitely going to create a reading list, which, you know, for our listeners, Phyllis's web details and book details will be in the show notes. I encourage you to learn more. And I will also see if between Phyllis and we can come up with some links to some of the other readings that Phyllis has talked about. Phyllis, thank you so much.
You're most welcome.
Have a good rest of week.
You too. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.